good morning, afternoon, or evening. I don't know how you listen to our show, but I'm super glad you're here. Really quickly before we get started, I just want to let you know some shows that members of our crew have going this week, chances to see us live and in person. The first show coming up is March 18th. It's one of R. Eric Thomas's show. It's Yum's the Word Ice Cream Social. This is a New York City show taking place at 7 o'clock. It's $10 at the gallery at LPR. Which is at 158 Bleecker Street in Manhattan, New York. So this shall be a great show. A lot of cool folks in it, especially Eric. And I do believe you get cake or ice cream, so you can't really argue with that. I know Eric would agree. On March 20th, at 7 o'clock, you can get a World Exists threefer at Tell Me a Story Road Trip at Shot Tower Coffee. That's 542 Christian Street in Philadelphia. That's Hillary's show, of course, so Hillary's always there. And this one will also feature TJ Hurley and R. Eric Thomas as well. So definitely go out and check that. Get yourself a cappuccino and enjoy some good coffee. Or if you miss your chance to have coffee there, you can have coffee 2 days later. You can't have coffee unless you're at a storytelling show. But if you go on March 22nd to the Bean Cafe at 8 o'clock, you can see TJ Hurley do stand-up comedy at Gorged alongside some other stand-up comics. That's at 615 South Street in Philadelphia. And since it's a coffee shop, there won't be any obnoxious drunks there, except possibly the comics, and they probably will be drunk. March 22nd through 24th is a three-night show that Eric and a couple of his theater friends have put together called Overexposed The Quickie. You can find out more about this show at the slightlyawkwardpeepshow.com. That's slightlyawkwardpeepshow.com. And the show takes place at the R Bar, 23rd and Walnut Street in Philadelphia. Or if you're already just checking Eric's site, rericthomas.com, of course, you can check it there. But I like saying that other URL, as you can imagine. March 25th, Hillary is going to have another Tell Me a Story, this time at the Kelly Writers House, which is on UPenn's campus, a great institution in our city. It's at 3805 Locust Walk in Philadelphia. That's Monday, March 25th. At 7 o'clock till 8:30, that will be a taping for a radio show the next week, so you can also listen to it on the radio a week later. Congratulations to Hillary for making that happen. And then I haven't had a show for a while, but this is Brady Dale, and I am going to be in my very first New York City show on March 27th, so would really love it if some listeners of The World Exists would come out to that. It's March 27th. It's at 8 o'clock. It's a part of the How I Learned series by Blaise Allison Kearsley. Thanks so much for inviting me to be a part of this. And the theme is How I Learned to Let Go. So I will be telling the story of a particularly horrible last breakup. And that will be at the Happy Ending Lounge at 302 Broome Street in New York. Again, it would be super cool if you're there. It's going to feature me and also Taylor Negron, who I remember watching on stand-up shows when I was a kid, and Elliot Glazer. Thanks so much, Blaze, for inviting me to be a part of this. It's super cool. Don't forget to check out Eric's blog. I just have a few notes at ijusthaveafewnotes.com about the Smash TV show. And also, remember, you can now listen to our podcast without downloading or syncing by downloading the Stitcher app, available in the iTunes Store, Android App Store, for your phone, your PC, or your tablet. Get the Stitcher app, put us in your favorites list, your life will be better. Though your life is already going to be better because you're about to listen to this week's episode of The World Exists. Thanks for being here. Hey everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the completely out of control crew of the World Exists podcast. I'm your host, Brady Dale. And so for this week, we've got something cool for you. TJ sat down and came up with a drinking game for The World Exists. So if you're at home going through sad times, having whiskey and listening to our podcast, we have the drinking game for you. TJ, take it away.
Okay, thank you, Brady. The World Exists roundtable storytelling podcast drinking game goes like this, is that you listen to it and you have a bunch of shots of whatever you want in front of you. And every time you hear me laugh like this, while somebody's talking annoyingly in the background, you drink. Every time Jamie mentions her brother, you drink. Every time R. Eric Thomas mentions Patti LaBelle or Beyonce,
hallelujah,
you drink. Every time Hillary Ray mentions musical theater or high school, you drink. Every time Brady Dale says he's from Kansas or says something that offends the women at the table, you drink. And this game is to be played alone while listening to the podcast on your headphones, and everybody loses when you play the World Exists drinking game.
So the folks around the table today are me, Brady Dale, and there's also obviously TJ Hurley. You can find him on Twitter at Timothy J. Hurley. Jamie Fontaine, she's on Twitter at Jamie Fontaine, and our Eric Thomas, who is our Eric on Twitter.
The World Exists podcast is a storytelling show where tales get told like they would at a bar or at brunch or at a funeral, with folks hopping in, making jokes, adding their own little side stories, and eating their feelings. You can see more about us, including photos of our tapings and videos, at theworldexists.com.
And today's featured storyteller is Brady Dale. Brady Dale is from Kansas. So you can go ahead and drink. He went to Cornell. And he's the producer of The World Exists. He is a recovering professional organizer and novelist. His two novella set, Dream Her Back, is available on Amazon right now. This year, he will release his novel, Depth and Faith, as a free audiobook. More information at BradyDale.com or on Twitter at Brady Dale.
Folks probably know the website. It was a blog, really, that was pretty big a few years ago. Stuff White People Like. You guys remember that one?
Love it.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah.
Accurate.
So one of
sadly
the
accurate.
The funniest thing they said on there, New Balance sneakers. That was the funniest one.
Now that you mention it, yeah, white people love those.
I think there's a Stuff White People Like about Ultimate Frisbee. I'm pretty sure they did write that.
Yeah. Do they have one about goat cheese? Because if they don't, they should have done goat cheese.
Yeah.
White people love goat
cheese.
This
white person loves goat cheese. And the other thing.
Ditto.
The other thing that this white person loves that they wrote about that I identified with way too much is difficult breakups.
White people be crazy.
My first girlfriend, we'll call her Greta. I started.
Why?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Was she a news reporter on CNN?
Like, was she an old German woman?
I can't really answer that question, but I will say...
Was she a Nazi hunter? Yeah,
she's an old German woman who's on CNN right now. And check her out. She bakes breads.
I will say...
She wears a dirndl, and she was Brady's first girlfriend.
She lives in a gingerbread house.
A part of why I chose that as her name is Greta is not her real first name, but it does reflect the character of what her actual first... It had that similar old-timey quality, so...
Now I just want to play guess the name of that girl.
I smell strudel.
So Greta was my first girlfriend, and I'll probably tell other stories about Greta at some point. I feel like I've referenced her in the past on other episodes, but we had a difficult breakup. And what I mean by we had a difficult breakup is she broke up with me again and again. I don't know, at least a half dozen times in like the real year that we were really dating. And then she would do the breaking up, and then she would ask me back every time. So the last couple of breakups we had, we stayed in each other's orbits for years, even subsequent to this, from separate states. But when we were kind of sort of really together was during my first years out of college, starting when I was in D.C., and then this story will take us to Florida. But the last two times we broke up was September 10th of 2001, the day before September 11th happened, and we were living in...
So wait, the 10th comes before the 11th?
Well, I just said it in order for you to know that it was the year of legit September 11th.
Guys, September 11th humor is not funny. I'm not kidding.
So we broke... We went to this restaurant in Adams Morgan, and because this girl who I'd known from college was waitressing there, and I was like, oh, I have a friend who's a waitress here. And when I saw this friend of mine, I knew she was training to do the AIDS ride, and her name was Mead. And I said, Mead, I haven't seen you for a while. You look great. I can tell that you've been really, you know, riding a lot on the AIDS ride. And she was like, oh, thanks, Brady. It's great to see you too. And that little exchange where I told a girl who I knew from college, who actually had dated my best friend Loki, and who had a boyfriend who I'd hung out with before, the fact that I said, you look great from riding for the AIDS ride was enough to infuriate Greta. And she barely ate the whole meal that we had there and then walked away really angry at me and then broke up with me. And then the world ended. But thank goodness for the anthrax scare that followed that, because she didn't like sleeping in her house alone when there was anthrax in the mail. And so she asked me back.
Oh my God. Wants to die alone. I mean, we all do, but nobody wants it.
So at that point, did you know Greta was crazy? I'm assuming that's where we're going.
I always have liked crazy girls anyway. So, yeah.
Have you ever examined that?
No, I've examined it. I don't know. I'm all right with it. But it was, it also, like, I mean, the thing you have to understand is, you know, the great irony of Greta and I's relationship was the big problem that we had was jealousy. And what was funny about that is Greta was so out of my league. I mean, she was my first girlfriend ever, and she was a complete knockout, you know, and I should have been jealous of her. Like, I should have been flipping out every time a guy walked by, but I wasn't.
It's weird. That's almost never like when there's a super jealous relationship, it's almost, if there's one person that's super jealous, it's almost never the way that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I swear, like almost every time I've seen that, it's always just like, wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah, this girl was like homecoming queen and all that, you know. The guys she dated were usually tall, legitimately tall, dark, and handsome, and I'm average and dark. I don't know. So it was just weird.
That should be the name of a coffee roast. So like when they serve in diners.
The one time I broke up with her was,
how long did that, how long did it stick? When you broke up with her, how long did it take to lose your nerve? Like 15 minutes? A day? 2 days?
Well, so I wish I remember why I broke up with her. She started some obnoxious fight with me about something, and I was like, I can't deal with this. And a part of the context for it, and a part of the reason I broke up with her was also the reason why we sort of got back together, was at this point, this is towards the end of the year, a little after September 11th, I was pretty sure I was moving away from D.C. I was kind of in talks with this organization in Florida. I was a national organizer in D.C., and I wanted to be like a real grassroots community organizer, like be in like the actual streets, like the real people, and work in like one town. And I was in talks with this organization.
This is for like a Florida-based white power group?
There's this network called DART, which is kind of like the Industrial Areas Foundation. If anybody knows about organizing, that's like, you know, the Saul Alinsky stuff, whatever. I wanted to be like a real, you know, grassrootsy dude. And so I was in talks with this organization to work for their Tallahassee office. And I was pretty sure I was going to leave. I was kind of fed up with DC at that point. And she was pretty sure she was going to leave at that time, too, because she was having some pretty serious health problems related to an injury she'd had from running. And her job was really stressful, so she was going to quit her job and kind of like not work for a while, move back home, and kind of get her skeleton back in order, see if she needed to get any surgeries or whatever, and get back on track and before she pursued her career again. So we were both kind of on our way out of town. So I got fed up with whatever craziness had led to us having this fight and broke up with her. And then she persuaded me that we should get back together just for as long as she was still going to be in D.C. because she was going to leave in December. So we did get back together.
That's very romantic.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to be here for another couple months, and just could you just hang out and then, you know, go away?
Do you want to have a guaranteed fuck for like the next 5 months?
Yeah, I want someone who will let me eat pizza and sweatpants and still kiss afterwards, which is also true in my life.
So what you guys are describing is what I thought we were agreeing to.
But were you just agreeing to be like an emotional dumping ground?
Well, you be the judge. So so we continued to talk about me moving to Florida, and we were kind of talking about her moving there too, even though I had broken up with her, and I said when she left town it was all going to be over. So to me, like, the talk of her moving to Florida as well was just sort of like talk. It was just, I don't know, I didn't take it seriously. So then
you didn't take a crazy woman seriously. That's your first mistake.
I know. So she moves away, and I help her pack up her stuff to move. And this is completely irrelevant to the story, but I'm strangely proud of it, so I'm just going to say it. She rented a sedan to drive her stuff back to Rochester, and she didn't have that much stuff. But she had enough stuff that it was going to be really hard to fit it into this like full-size sedan. So I helped her move, and I was like, I made her not put anything into the car. I was like, let me put every single piece in. And I packed it so well that when she got to Rochester, her father, who hated me, thought I was a terrible guy, didn't let her start unpacking it first because he just wanted to admire it.
That's awesome.
That is the ultimate dad approval.
Yeah.
Just like, man, this is good shit. This is good. Fuck that Brady. This is good.
Are you looking on this fondly because you have to move and you want to have some pride in it instead of just the horror of moving?
I'm gonna hire out experts this time.
I like her father looking at the trunk of the car and just being like, "Brady, you magnificent son of a bitch."
there is a special kind of pride that comes from other people admiring the way that you've packed.
Yeah,
like all I wanted on the day I hired movers, because I'm a dilettante. Like floozy, but like all I wanted the entire day, like as they moved all my stuff out of my old place and into my new place, all I wanted was for one of those hipsters to be like, "You did a really good job." And at the end of it, the guy was like, "You guys did a really good job of packing." And I like literally single tear down my face. I was like, "Thank you, hipster who does this for a living. I really put a lot of thought into labeling, stacking, weighing, organizing, the whole nine."
No, my packing skills are abysmal.
Come over. I'll do it.
Yeah. I'm moving in 3 weeks.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
The last time I moved was not that long ago. And I used kind of a lot of black trash bags.
Oh, yeah. Trash bags, like weird assorted.
It was embarrassing.
Oh, yeah. I don't even label boxes. And then when I open them, I was like, why do I have like forks, a pillowcase, 8 books, and like something I didn't know I owned?
A lamp
in
with
here.
No cord. Why did I keep this?
Just don't make trash bags your luggage. That's the real.
Oh, my luggage is bad too, because I always have like a giant bag. And there's nothing inside, and like I always like don't bring enough socks, but I always bring too much underwear. It's bad. I mean,
so so Greta leaves town, and she's in Rochester, and it takes another month and a half before it's clear that I'm moving to Florida. And we keep talking on the phone all the time, which should have made it clear to me that she was seeing a little bit more going in our relationship than I thought it was. But to me, she was just a person that it was easy to talk to, and I liked talking on the phone in those days. So I thought we were really done, because when she left, we had said we'd broken up, and so I was confused about what that meant. But apparently we weren't, and we always had this very frank and open relationship where, young men out there, if you're listening, don't ever do this with anyone you're involved with, where we were really honest about our personal lives, especially sex. And so I ended up sleeping with one of my coworkers a little while before I left my job, because I knew I was leaving, so who cared, and I really wanted to sleep with her, and I did. And I told her about this, and she flipped her shit at me.
It didn't sound like a good idea.
Yeah,
in
good
your
thinking,
head.
Brady.
There's honesty, and then there's honesty. And right. I think we all know now there's a distinction between those.
Yeah.
No, that's a hard lesson to learn.
It is a hard lesson to learn. And I'll just be honestly self-reflective here. And this is, there's nothing admirable about this, but I had such a hard time with women for so long that anytime I actually, when I started getting a few of them to sleep with me, it was, I wanted to tell someone about it. It was so amazing to me.
The way that
occurred.
Did you ever see getting the women to sleep with me?
That part in Cabin Boy where he goes and he goes to like, has sex with a woman. And when he comes out, because as he's going, all his buddies are like, "Oh, you didn't get your pipes cleaned?" And he's like, "Oh, I don't know." And he comes out, and he's like no longer a boy. He's like a man with like a ripped open shirt, and he puts his hands on his shoulder, on his hips, and he's like, "These pipes are clean." And like sings it from a mountaintop.
Yeah, it's kind of how I felt about it.
Yeah, no, the way you said that just like it makes me think that you have like a bag full of things that you're like trying to like, all right, what about hard candies? No, nope, money? No, do you want a beer? Like, all right, I have a book here. We could have an assorted like bag of bribes.
If you're moving, I can pack your car really well.
Yeah.
That's probably the most attractive of all those.
That's very attractive.
I do think Jamie's right. That is how I thought of it. It wasn't this like mutual thing that two people decide to do because they like each other. You needed to convince someone. You needed to like win them over.
Right. If it doesn't make any sense that this person would actually want to have sex with you, it seems like, oh my God, I can't believe she's letting this happen.
Right. It's totally, that's why.
No, I know exactly what you mean.
Is that really what that's like?
Oh, absolutely.
When I was young. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So I told her about this. She flipped out. She was so angry. We stopped talking on the phone, and I thought we were like legitimately done. So I get this job in Florida, and I move down there. It's in Tallahassee, Florida. And Tallahassee has, as far at least then, had what I think to this day is still the best college radio station that I've ever come across. It was WVFS, the voice of Florida State. And it was total like indie rock hipster college radio. And it introduced me to indie rock, and I thought it was fantastic. And one of the things that made it so good is college radio has different levels of how well organized it is. But this one had a really good programming. So they would, you know, the students could clearly pick a certain number of songs that were on their own, but they also had other songs that were on heavy rotation, like major radio does it. Only their songs in heavy rotation were like cool indie rock songs, not like the latest, right, you know, Pink song or whatever. And so you would, if,
excuse me,
if they if they, I had to suppress saying Beyonce, Eric, so be glad I didn't pick Beyonce.
I will burn this place down. We'll burn it to the ground.
So anyway, so my point
five
is,
die in Beyonce rage induced fire. South Philadelphia.
Nothing against Beyonce, I'm just saying that their rotation wasn't mainstream. So they would pick a certain number of songs, and one of the songs that was on heavy rotation when I first moved there was this song that I'm going to play for you guys right now, because it really, I liked it on its own, but it also really spoke to me at that moment. And every time I hear about it, I am back in Tallahassee, and I'm driving my car around, and I'm going to meetings with people who I've never met before.
Good, but it's not as good as most Pink songs. Let's put it out there, okay?
That song is good, but it's worse than the worst Pink song.
Exactly. Well, there's one bad one, but yeah, it's worse than most of the other ones.
Now, how do you like feel like about the attitude of that girl singer versus Pink's bad girl attitude from her early career?
Well, you know, I do like the sincerity, and, you know, I think the lyrics are a bit smarter than Pink's early lyrics, like Can't Take Me Home, not a very lyrically adept song. But her later stuff, Try, from her latest album, nominated for a Grammy, amazing.
Yeah, no, she's local.
So
she's local, and she does acrobatics. Does this girl do acrobatics, Brady?
I don't know.
I think that Eric just strong-armed you to never say anything bad about Pink on the podcast again.
Yeah, let's never do that.
You want to see what happens, Brady? You want to see what happens you say about Pink? I'm going to derail your story. That's just going to happen, Brady.
I meant was she's
you just
mainstream.
Got bullied.
That is all I meant.
Yeah. I'm a bully. Yes!
My favorite thing about Pink, aside from her stellar career, is all the stories you occasionally hear from people who knew her and like beat her up at the mall or something. And even if they're made up, they're still like really realistic made up stories. It's like, oh yeah, I used to know Alicia, that bitch. and then in interviews with Pink, which I can't explain how I've read them, she's always like, oh yeah, I was an awful person when I was a teenager. So then you believe all these fight stories.
True. Oh, yeah. So let's get back to this. Who is No-No?
It's the No-Nos. Yeah, okay. It's the No-Nos. And the song is called Girlfriend. And it's, you know, it's a song about this guy goes over to this girl's house and her roommate has to tell him that she's left him. So, it, you know, it spoke to me because I didn't have a girlfriend anymore and I was doing my thing. But I was surprised after not being, I was in Tallahassee for probably a month, and I get this email from Greta saying, I don't know how you feel about this, but I got a job in Tallahassee and I'll be there on Wednesday. So I was blown away by this. And my mom was actually in town at the moment that I got that email, and I was like, holy crap. And she was like, don't let it throw you for a loop. Of course, it totally did. When I met up with her, you know, I don't know. It was all the crazy complicatedness of our crazy complicated relationship coming back there. I won't go through all of that, but she didn't move into my place. She didn't live with me. She got her own apartment, but we kind of got back together, sort of, though we said that we weren't a couple, because if we said we weren't dating, then she wouldn't have her crazy, psychotic, jealous, ragey stuff. So even though we were
together. Did that work?
It did work.
Really?
Yeah. Like,
whoa.
If we said we weren't a couple, even though we were together like every night, she wouldn't flip out if like a door opened and I looked to see that the door had opened and a girl walked in.
You it's know, like, it, the way you describe this relationship, it's like you have a car that like you're like, as long as I never put it in third gear, it won't explode and kill us all. Right. You know what I mean? It's just like, no, it works fine. It's a good car. It's a good car. It gets me around it. But if I go over third gear, we'll all die. But as long as I don't do that, it's fine.
Yeah.
Don't even worry about it.
So it's kind of crazy that this girl followed me to Tallahassee. And it's sort of very typical of her that, like, I knew we were talking about her coming there, but she never told me that she'd actually put any applications out, you know, because that was her sort of, I'm not defined by the man in my life and I'm not going to let him tell me what to do kind of attitude by not telling me that she was actually pursuing this idea that I thought we were just joking around about. So she moves there. She's there for about 3 months. It's fairly tumultuous. And then the funding for the job that she'd gotten dried up unexpectedly, which sounds like a real bummer, but actually she had made some really awesome connections in Florida and ended up getting a really great job at a much bigger nonprofit at like way more money, but in West Palm Beach, which is pretty far from Tallahassee. So she is going to move. She's going to move to West Palm, and I'm going to stay in Tallahassee. Meanwhile, at that point, it had already become pretty clear to me that I did not belong as a community organizer in Tallahassee. It also, the funding for my organization looked shaky, too. If I had been a more senior organizer with a little more fundraising experience, I probably could have solved the problem. Like, I think I now could solve the problem, but at that time, I had no idea what I was doing. I wasn't a good fundraiser. Couldn't solve it. So I start flipping out and thinking that I need to find another job. Meanwhile, she's gone, and I have no friends in Tallahassee, and I'm insanely, insanely sad and lonely, and I'm not making any friends, and Greta has moved away. So it became the one and only period in my life in which I tried online dating. And the way that I pursued online dating was...
What year would this have been?
2001 or 2002?
So I'm sure everybody knows this, but online dating in 2001, I'm going to assume it was very different than it is now.
Yeah, I was doing... I was weird. I've always been a loyalist of certain brands. And so at that time, I was a Yahoo loyalist. Until I eventually became a Google loyalist. But so I was using like Yahoo Singles. That's definitely what I was using.
Oh my God. Yahoo Singles. They had like the most aggressive marketing campaign.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They were really.
And is that what it was called? Yahoo Singles?
Yahoo Singles. Yeah. Okay. I have a shirt that says Yahoo Singles is for lovers. Nice. Anyway, continue.
So I was, you know, playing around Yahoo Singles. And I don't know why I was doing this, but apparently I was casting my net pretty wide geography-wise because I started emailing with this girl who lived way down in South Florida. And she was a writer of erotic poetry. And
she sounds way less crazy than your last girlfriend.
So we started emailing online, and I was making plans to go visit Greta in South Florida in West Palm, and she lived really close to there. And so it made sense to me at the time because Greta
you finger quoted made sense right now, which I think is important to point out.
It made sense to me at the time to make plans to meet up now because I wasn't dating Greta, right? So this is okay. There's nothing wrong with doing this. To meet up with her before I went over to Greta's. So I made plans to meet up with this girl. We'll call her Salome.
Brady still, his head is attached to his neck. So maybe Salome is not the best name for her because...
No, I think she is an erotic poet who often went by like weird made up names online. I think Salome is
a totally...
But
she didn't have your head on a platter.
She didn't have my head on a platter.
Yeah.
I'm kind of amazed that you decided you wanted to meet this woman. She sounds like the prototypical like early 2000s internet girl. She writes erotic poetry. She has weird names.
Right.
She looks like Sacagawea.
Right. She sent me photos in which she had she'd taken her photo and put it like in a little heart, you know, like she'd taken on her computer. So we made plans to have lunch beforehand. And you have to understand that every time a woman agreed to meet up with me, it was a tremendously vulnerable moment for me because you, on the one hand, you know, most guys would be like, oh, this is great. I got someone to agree to a date to me. But to me, I was 75% certain that they were just saying yes because it was easier than saying no. And what they were actually going to do is just stand me up because this had happened plenty of times in the past.
And you weren't afraid that she was going to murder you?
Well, no, because we're going to meet up at a diner. So so I go to this diner, and of course, she's fairly late getting there, which makes me just sit there anxiously, being like, she's definitely standing me up. But you know how when people post photos of themselves on the internet, they're always their best possible
MySpace
photo, right?
Angles.
And when you finally see them, they
this
don't
angle
look...
gives me a chin and shows off my eyeliner.
Right. they don't look nearly as good when you meet them.
Never, ever.
Not the case with this girl.
In the brief time that I did online dating, I tried to put bad pictures of myself on the internet so it could like only be up.
Yeah.
That's a really good idea. I don't know why people don't do that.
This lady lived up to the hype and more. When she walked in, she looked, and this is a positive characterization. You guys can hear it any way you want, but she looked like a suicide girl. I was like, oh my God. You know, like I hit the intense, you know, sexual demon jackpot. When
everybody
she
drink. Everybody drink. Brady's making a woman uncomfortable.
Yeah. She walks in. I'm completely nervous and awkward of this girl being here. But for whatever reason, I mean, I guarantee I was terrified. I mean, I felt like I was, you know, in the room with a force of nature. She seemed to really like me. And I a part of the evidence I'll submit to the fact that she did seem to really like me is we had lunch for longer than she meant to. And this is in the days of the early days of cell phones when not everyone had cell phones. And this is important for the story that I didn't have a cell phone at this point. But she had one of those, remember those Nextel phones where you could do the chirping thing where anyone mm-hmm. who was on your list could just talk to you at any time? Her boss started being like, get back to the office, you're needed here, you know, and she's like, I'm sorry. And so like, she was like, I'm sorry, I'll get back there. And like, I guess her boss knew she was on a date and like kind of made a joke about it. And so she, you know, stayed too long and she knew I was in South Florida. I think I said I was like hanging out with a friend. And so she was like, well, as long as you're down here, we should meet up on Sunday. So why don't you come over to my place on Sunday? We'll meet up. I live in this apartment complex. She gave me the address. Why don't you come there and we'll hang out on Sunday? So this like a gorgeous, like sexually demonic looking erotic poet has told me for our second time meeting, I should come over to her apartment, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm like, wow, this makes me really nervous. And so then I go to see Greta and we have a lovely weekend in West Palm Beach together. We go to this really cute ice cream shop. You know, we act like boyfriend and girlfriend. And in the weird, strangely open spirit of our relationship, I end up telling her about Salome.
Oh, that is
Salome.
A mistake. Oh my God,
and I actually, you know what? I feel like the listeners, we all know she reacted really well to it. And everybody had a lovely time, right?
Yeah. Here's the thing.
And they all moved into a house together. They had a lovely married couple
and everybody's,
as landlords.
Everybody's
Mr.
still
and Mrs.
friends.
Roper.
She. So here's the thing. And I'm going to let folks interpret it whatever way they want. She did react really well to it and thought it was really cool. And encouraged me to like be sure to go see her on Sunday. Because when I told her about it, I was like, you know, maybe I shouldn't do it. She was like, no, you definitely should. There is a decent chance that it was one of those things where she was saying that but didn't really mean it at all. I don't know.
I've seen stalker movies. This is how they do.
Yeah.
When they break psychotically, they're just like, oh, no, go see that girl, please. As they're like sharpening a knife under the counter.
Yeah. I never ended up getting any fallout from Greta about that particular instance. But here's,
Brady is missing a finger.
But here's how it all ended. So like I said, I didn't have a cell phone. And it was one of those, it was deep enough in the cell phone era where it was rare to not have a cell phone. But people who did have cell phones, I think even if you told them I don't have a cell phone, they still kind of thought you had a cell phone and would behave that way. Like, you know how now you don't ever really make plans to meet people in specific places. You're just like, I'll be in Center City around 7:30 and let's call each other and we'll find each other. Like that sort of thing.
I don't do that at all, but I'm 100.
You are 100.
People, yeah. So she had said, come to my apartment at this time and that's how we'll meet up. And so that's what I did. And I had a really stressful time getting there. And it was like weird Florida, like subdivision world. And it was hard to find. But I finally found it. And I went to the door of her apartment and I knocked on it and nobody answered. And I stood there knocking on it and nobody answered. And I tried some other doors just in case maybe I was wrong. And I just stood around there and no one was answering the door. And I was like, how is this possible? I've been stood up. And what I realized, I was like, well, I've got her number. I could go over, there was like a Burger King, like you had to get in your car, drive back out of this gigantic subdivision parking lot, you know, go half a mile around ridiculously far to get to this Burger King. And I was like, well, there's probably a payphone there and I could call her. But in my mind, like if you've been stood up a bunch of times, the only source of pride that you have left is not doing that final outreach, not like, you know, not giving them the satisfaction of like letting it go to voicemail. And so I was like, well, I'm not, she's just clearly setting me up. I'm not fucking calling her. Like, fuck that. And that was like the only pride I had to go on. And of course, like I'd left Greta slightly earlier than I needed to so I could meet up with this girl. So I was pissed about that. I had gone another hour further south, which meant my drive home was going to be another, you know, hour longer. And I was just furious about it. And I think it's like a 5-hour drive back from like South Florida to Tallahassee. It's pretty far. However long it was, it's long enough. And I spent that entire drive just shaking with anger and sort of contemplating like what I was going to do to express my hostility. And then, of course, telling myself you can't do anything because that just gives them more power. And just in this insane, crazy dialogue with myself for five or six hours about how angry I was at this girl for not being there and not showing up. And so then I get home.
I mean, I think at least you didn't have too much riding on this. You know, I think that's the silver lining here is that you hadn't put too much on it.
Yeah, no, it's not like my self-esteem was hanging on to it. Or it's
she was the most gorgeous girl that anyone who's ever met anyone on the internet has ever seen.
Yeah, yeah, none of that. None of that bothered me. This isn't in my top three biggest regrets of my entire life. No, it's not. It's not at all. Not at all. So yeah, I get back to my apartment in Tallahassee, which is the first time that I've been reconnected to the electronic world because I didn't have a cell phone. And I have an email from her that says, what happened? Where were you this afternoon? And I don't know if we did it over AOL Instant Messenger or if we did it over email, but I said I was there. You know, I knocked on your door and you didn't answer. And she said, and she was like, oh, I was waiting for you out by the pool. Which means like she was probably waiting for me in a bikini, she was gonna meet me in a way that was already gonna blow my mind, which is my mind.
Maybe it all isn't like that though. Maybe she was wearing one of those knee-length 1920s bathing suits, and it turns out that she had like there's just a hole in her torso full of like oozing.
I don't think so. I don't think that was
still kind of hot.
Yeah.
Well, you know, TJ, you're a connoisseur of women, and you know, Brady's just he'll take anything. You
this
know,
this is a very different '80s movie, but it's still an '80s movie. Yeah. Like,
so you know, I think what happened. It could be that she did stand me up, and this was all just a lie to cover her tracks. I mean, I'll never know. I didn't go to the Burger King.
So, because what would she what stake would she have in making up this story? You know what I mean? Like, she's done nothing to gain from it,
right?
Like, what she was saying was probably true,
right? And she probably was thinking like a person who has a cell phone.
Yeah. Like, she's if, like, he'll call me when he gets here.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And my stupid little I've been burned too many times before. Mm-hmm. Pride wouldn't let me make that one phone call. God. And so she emailed me back and she's like, oh, that's too bad. Well, I guess it just wasn't meant to be.
Oh, the ultimate hot girl response. Like, whatever. I'll have plenty of dick after this.
Can you just say that as your new catchphrase every time something pisses you off? Like, oh, you messed up my coffee order? Whatever. I'll get plenty of dick after this. Out.
Starbucks is going to hear about it tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll get plenty of dick after that. Out of here. Done. Like, I would like to leave rooms like that, but I feel like it is upsetting when I say that because everyone stopped looking me in the eye.
I think it's funny when you do it. It's a little aggressive when I do it. Yeah. So, like, did you cry?
I don't think I cried.
You don't saying I don't think I cried means that you cried, but you don't admit that you cried.
No, I didn't. I'm pretty sure I didn't cry. I mean, I've cried plenty of times. I cry a lot, but that's not the kind of situation in which I would cry. What I did was way worse than crying. It's like I wish I would cry. I seethed. I'm sure I seethed that entire night. I seethed well into the next day. I'm sure I don't remember, and I wasn't really into journaling then, so I don't have it written down, but I'm sure I just didn't think about anything else other than, yeah, nothing else. And she and I kind of stayed in touch for a while, but then pretty soon I left Florida and ended up moving to Wisconsin, which was further and further away. And she sent me a CD that some of her crazy erotic poetry had gotten onto, and which she did it under some like pseudonym. I don't remember what her pseudonym was. And then our contact petered off and never heard from her again. I don't think I missed out on love here. But I think I missed out on a pretty good afternoon.
Yeah, I don't think we were ever talking about love. There's a woman lying by a pool in a bathing suit.
The running themes of the story have been codependence, emotional abuse. I think probably both ways, and lust.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love never even entered the state of Florida. It really
I mean, has it ever really?
So do any of the other folks around the table have stories of the inevitable sadness of internet connections that they can share with us?
Sure. This is TJ. I did online dating for a little while and it was fine. Like nothing like really that remarkable. It was just all pretty boring. But the one thing that I thought was funny, I went on a date with this one woman and we like went and sat outside at some Mexican place and got margaritas. And she was nice, but everything was cool. And then within 5 minutes, she just started telling me stories about all of the other dates she had been on. And I was like, oh, this is funny, sure. But then she just continued to start talking and telling me stories about like all the guys she dated and how horrible they were. And then as the stories went on and they piled up more and more, they all started reflecting way worse on her than on any of these dudes. Like she was telling me stories about like, she had like four like boyfriends in a row that were all horrible racists. And I was just like, what? And she would be like, isn't that insane? I'm like, yeah, that's insane. But you were there. And then you dated another racist after that. And it was just like, that whole thing was a disaster. And then when we were done the pitcher of margaritas, I was like, oh, well, have a good night. And it was like on a Thursday. The next day I'm driving to the beach with my friends and I'm driving, right? I'm talking to my friends around 7 p.m. I feel a text like meh, meh, meh. About an hour and a half later, by 8:30, I feel another text meh, 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 in my pocket. We get to where we are. We get unpacked. I eventually later that night check my phone. The first text is from her at 7 p.m. 7 p.m., right? And it just says, hey, I had a good time. You want to hang out again? Let me know. Okay. I'm like, I don't, but whatever. And then the next text was from 8:30. It was her being like, fine, fuck you then. And it was like this crazy screed. And I was just like, what? What's like, what? It's an hour and a half? Like, what do you expect from me, you psycho?
Pretty much every experience. I mean, like a lot of modern gay men, I've met a lot of people through the internet. And every experience is its own private horror. And, you know, except for the ones that were good, friends and boyfriend. Actually, I know I met my boyfriend in person. So there we go. But like in the early days, especially like it was still like, you know, around the time that you're having this experience with this girl, I was meeting people and it was like the internet was just like it was like still like the Wild West, like around like the Gold Rush age. And like there were gold nuggets out there, but there was a lot of like consumption and like death by Indian.
A lot of fool's gold.
Gold and prospectors.
And so I remember prospectors.
I don't know. I'm really into prospectors today. TJ showed me a picture of a guy with a beard and now.
Yeah. And nobody was ever as attractive as they say they're going to be. And nobody was ever that dream girl. Like if anybody did seem to be like the dream girl or dream guy, they would always like lead you along and then never meet up. But there was this one guy, I was summer after sophomore year. I wasn't home in Baltimore, but I was like carrying on this chat relationship with this dude in Philly. And like in my mind, like he didn't have a picture and that was okay back then. And nowadays, not having a picture is not acceptable. But like he was like, I don't have a scanner. I'm like, all right, whatever. So in my mind, he looked like, I don't know, Shamar Moore, because of course. So I come up to New York and I'm staying with my best friend and I'm supposed to meet him outside of ABC Studios because he's interning there. And I'm like, oh, TV boy. Like out comes this like just lump of flop sweat. Like he was this like short, round black dude, like sweating profusely, really unkempt, crazy hair. I'm like, where do you work at NBC? He's like, I work in the copy room. And he's got like this huge backpack full of reams of paper. He's like, I'm sorry, I'm stealing paper to print my novel on. And I didn't have time to like take it home before our date.
Would you describe his physique as a Ziploc bag full of pudding?
exactly what it was. And like, you know, I've dated people of all sizes. I don't have a size issue, but it was just sort of like his unkemptness offended me. Yeah. Because I was kempt. I am a kempt person.
You are very kempt.
I try and kemp it up.
Wait,
all
is that,
the time.
Is that are we mispronouncing kempt on purpose or is that a different word I just learned
like,
about?
Unkempt is like K-E-M-P-T.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
I mean, I like to say that I'm gruntled because it relates to disgruntled, but no one ever says gruntled.
Yeah, same thing here. Gruntled sort of just makes it sound like you're a creature that lives underground and like does interesting work
and I
there.
Might have to slay you and your mom.
But it was actually my friend Loki who first said gruntled. But anyway, I was picking up what you're putting down with kempt.
Thank you. So anyway, like we had this terrible date that and then all of a sudden he was like, oh, listen, I'm an intern. Can you pay? And I'm like, I'm a college student as well. Like, you're crazy. So I paid for our date and it was over by like 8 o'clock. So it was clearly a great date. And then he emails me. He's like, you know, I was talking about my novel, so I wanted to email it to you to let you see it. And it was like literally like 400 pages of like about like his father and like and the abuse of mental and other kinds of abuse. And it was like a comedy. And I was like, I don't understand this. But he literally didn't leave me alone for like a year. Like he was like emailing and calling. And so now we're married. So yeah. Just kidding.
His name is Jay.
His name is Jay.
You've been hearing about him.
No, Jay's not like that at
Jay,
all.
Jay. I've seen pictures of Jay on the internet, and he doesn't look like a Ziploc bag full of pudding.
He got himself in shape. He's been, you know.
His novel really improved in the last 10 years.
Jamie, do you have a tale of internet sadness?
Well, I am afraid of people on the internet, so I've never done the internet date business, but I did have a live journal when I was a senior in high school and a freshman in college. I'm pretty sure I've deleted as much evidence of it as is possible. So good luck. But I had this live journal, and I joined a live journal community about like of my college, so I could learn like what I should bring to school. Like, oh, what are the dorms like kind of things? You could post little questions. And before I got to college, it turned out that this dude like saw my picture and decided I was great and like started following me, like secret following me. And then I got to college, and when I showed up at the first Lit Mag meeting, he like acted like he already knew me. And it was because he had been internet stalking me. And we lived together for 2 years. So I found out the internet stalking thing later.
So that's
after any, I already lived in that apartment.
Any internet stalkers out there, it does pay off sometimes.
Yeah, you know, just keep it quiet on the down low. Just start showing up where I go.
Be persistent, and you will eventually get what you want.
Yeah, no, I'm very small, and it's easy to kidnap me.
I have a friend who stalked a girl for all through college, and 14 years later, they did eventually have a brief romance.
That's
someday I may tell that story.
That hurts my feelings.
And ruin both of their lives?
Yeah. Thanks a lot for tuning in with us today. Again, the folks around the table were our Eric Thomas, TJ Hurley, and Jamie Fountain. You are welcome to stalk me online and stalk the World Exists podcast. That's cool. I don't mind. We'd love to hear your stories of misconnections or the horrors of internet romance. On our website, feel free to stop by there. And, of course, keep those comments coming on our iTunes page. Thanks a ton. And here is a reason, a little snippet from next week that will encourage you to come back.
Now, did you bring up, like, the lizard thing? Or was he just like, let me tell you about how lizards fuck?
I was going to say, was he talking about lizards? And you were like, how are lizards act romantically? Like,
trying to lean in.
Can you tell when a lizard is kind of in love with another lizard?
Yeah. So when two lizards are in love.
Did you try to then behave like that lizard that was in love with another lizard?
Do lizards just kind of hang out together for a long time?
First of all, these are iguanas. Iguanas are a lizard.